I think the key is to identify your ideal client and try to get them to be excited about your work and actually be your sort of brand ambassador.
Welcome to the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast, your resource for building the photography business of your dreams. This is Shamira Young, bringing you tips, business strategies, and interviews with award-winning photographers. We're all in this together. Let's get to the good stuff. Hey everybody, I'm here with Dave Scott, owner of PhotographySpark.com. It's an online resource for photographers who want to plan, start, and grow their business. So it is right up my alley. Dave, say hello.
Hello. Thanks, Shamira.
Thank you for being on the show. You know, I'm super excited. In the pre-interview chat, we were talking about how when a photographer steps into their photography business, they're not really focused on the business side. They just think, oh, I want to take pretty pictures and the rest will kind of fall into place. But what many of us find out the hard way, myself included years ago, is that it's about 80% business stuff and 20% actually taking pretty photos and making portraits and making pictures. And so, you know, I'm really excited to have you on the show today because we're going to be chatting about offline and online marketing strategies for photographers, which your website, Photography Spark, is just a gem and a jewel as far as business information for photographers.
Thanks very much.
So the first thing I want to do, now, obviously, I know about you, and we've chatted, and I've seen your site, and we've known each other for a little while now, but I want to make sure that the listening audience gets a sense of who you are. So just give us a bit of info on how you're currently involved in the photography business space.
Right, so I'm currently I currently run the website Photography Spark, which we focus on business education for photographers and sort of optimizing your website. So a lot of great resource for photographers, and that sort of stemmed from my background in I have a degree in computer science, so I started life, you know, sort of programming computers, and then got interested in the web, and I had a lot of friends and colleagues who were involved in various businesses, and through the years I've learned some of the techniques they've used to get their business online and sort of promote and market, and most of these are sort of one person, you know, sole proprietor type businesses. So that was sort of how I got started in the business side of things. And then I've always had an interest in photography, more as an amateur, not a professional photographer. But I had the opportunity to get involved with Photography Spark and sort of combine my enjoyment of photography with some of the business and marketing knowledge that I gained over the years.
Very cool. And you know, it's interesting because, and I've said this before on the show, but we've had a small, I don't want to say small, but well, with 130 something episodes, there's been a definite number of interviewees, guests that we've had on the show who have a technical background. And actually we've had plenty of guests who did not go to school for photography. We have some who went to school for coding and other technical,
sure,
you know, computer techie stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm always struck by how efficiently they run their businesses when they get into photography. Or we've even had other guests who are not photographers, but who consult, who are consultants for photographers to help them run their businesses better. And I almost think, I don't want to call it an advantage, but because they're a little more separated, like they're not so emotionally married to a camera, they're able to step back and really process what makes a business run well. So, I mean, I really appreciate you being here and being willing to share your expertise with us, especially with the marketing side. You mentioned marketing, how you guys cover that on Photography Spark. That's something that a lot of us neglect with our businesses. It's like the last thing, and I'm kind of still guilty of this. It's like there's so many things that we have to do. We run out of time for marketing for our businesses. So, you know, I really want to segue into the marketing portion of this discussion, and in particular, partner marketing. Now, before we get into it, could you give us a definition kind of what that means?
Sure. I'd say partner marketing is seeking out opportunities that with related businesses related to your business, so complementary businesses, where you can kind of cross-promote the types of offerings you have. So it kind of allows you to gain access to another pool of clients that maybe aren't accessible to you.
Interesting. Okay. So could you give us an example?
Sure. So actually one top example that comes to mind in the, let's say in the wedding photography space, quite often there's venues where people will hold the reception, be it a country club or or some kind of a reception venue. And that's a natural complement to a wedding photographer because customers of that venue are going to be interested in many things, but in particular photography services.
Right.
So I remember working with one particular client who they actually became the recommended photographer for that venue, and the venue would kind of cross promote the photography services. And it was kind of a strong selling point that the photographer was sort of familiar with the venue, familiar with where the good shots are. And so it really was a kind of a win-win, and it was a good way to leverage both those channels.
Yeah, and it seems like it's a time saver too. It's like you're building a marketing team.
Absolutely. And like I said, it's a win-win. So ideally, you know, both sides are excited about it. Like I said, you also get that exposure, you know, to you kind of multiplying your efforts to cover a wider audience.
Right. And so with wedding photographers then, I mean, there's the venue, there are florists, let me think, bridal shops.
DJs.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So there's many opportunities, you know, that you can kind of develop a relationship. And a lot of times you might be speaking with a client and they'll say, hey, do you know a good DJ? And you can obviously, you can provide a referral, and then, you know, vice versa, that gives you, if you have that relationship, that gives you the opportunity to foster that way.
Right, right. Now, I'm curious then, as far as establishing contact. So I'm sure we have some listeners who are introverts, and I'm an introvert too. So I'm curious, how do we get out there and start, I guess, getting to know these florists and DJs and bridal shops?
Yeah, that can be a challenge for the introverts, of which I probably tend to be one of them as well. So I can appreciate where you're coming from. I mean, it's as simple as just think of it as, you know, having a conversation. So you can approach the various venues and, you know, strike up a conversation with the owner. Mm-hmm. That's one avenue. The other avenue is there are various meetup groups. So they might be local to your area where there's a meetup group that you can kind of meet like-minded people.
Right.
And another good avenue would also be if you can have someone provide an introduction, that mm-hmm. it's always will, you know, go further than maybe cold calling or approaching someone. So I think if you can kind of tap your network and try to find someone who can make an introduction, that can, you know, take some of the stress out of that process.
Definitely. Definitely. I'm glad that you mentioned it starts with a conversation. People are very sensitive to being, I guess, used or marketed to.
Absolutely.
So you don't want to come off as like telemarketing, or you can't just think of yourself even. You mentioned it's a cross promotion type of thing where both businesses benefit from it.
That's correct. And, you know, one way to frame it is, or to approach the conversation is, try to learn about their business and what their sort of challenges are. And then that will, you know, sort of spark you to be able to recommend how there might be some synergy if you work with them. But it's always better to start out just kind of learning from their point of view about their business and what their challenges are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Recently it was Andrew Helmich on the show, actually, episode 132. And he shared a cool networking strategy that he either used himself or he's seen other people use it. I have to double check or re-listen to that interview. We talked about all kinds of good stuff. One thing he mentioned was that he'll sit down and chat with a related business. So, example, you know, back to the wedding photographer example. Say he sits down with a florist or a bridal shop. And he'll sit down with them in person and interview them. And he's asking questions as if he were their potential client. And so in that way, he's getting to know them better. And then he actually posts that interview on his website. And that gives them more exposure. And it was something I had not heard before as far as a tactic being used, where it deepens that relationship. And SEO, actually, when people started in his local area Googling like wedding DJ or wedding or florist, he would start coming up because he had put that interview on his site. So he probably had some text to go with it, like a whole write-up and everything. But I thought that was a great example of really getting to know the other business that you want to cross-promote with. And then they obviously were more willing to cross-promote him because they see him go to such great lengths to get to know them, and even just to show that he cares. I mean, that's what it all really comes down to, right? Showing that you care.
Yeah, that's a great point. People like to do business with other people who they like. So even better if you're an actual customer of the business or you have some sort of personal connection. So that definitely goes a long way in forging some of these relationships.
For sure. And for the introverts out there, you know, like I said, I am one, but you have to get out there and network. I definitely want to mention the Chamber of Commerce as a great way to get to know other businesses. And when I moved here, I'm in Port Huron, Michigan. I've mentioned it before. And then I'm relatively new to the area. I haven't been here a couple of years. And one of the first things I had to do was get myself out there and get to meet other businesses and just have conversations with them. And that has been powerful and helpful in identifying other businesses that complement my own. So, for example, I focus on corporate photography. And as far as the other businesses that complement what I do, so like business headshots, simple example. You know, we have businesses around here who focus on taxes, doing taxes for other businesses. So that's someone that is complementary to what I do. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You bring up a good point that sometimes it may not be apparent that there's a direct connection, but you also have to look for some of these indirect connections. So
right.
Businesses that maybe serve the same clientele, and that can be an avenue to find referrals. Yeah.
Yep. For me, marketing companies, that's another one. Printers around here. So, and I mean, it's a, you know, step-by-step process. I'm still in the process of building these relationships out myself. And it doesn't have to be a ton of people, by the way. I mean, you can start with the goal of building a relationship with three businesses in your area where you all have the same audience, but you're not competing with each other. So, and then another past guest on the show, he mentioned real estate agents, actually. So for the family portrait photographers out there, if you're able to build a relationship with real estate agents in your area, they come into contact with families all the time. I mean, that can be a huge source of getting clients to come your way.
That's a great suggestion. That's actually one I didn't think of, but yeah, the fact that they're serving the family clientele, they know maybe you know, they have a usually real estate agents have a wide sort of network, so right. they can be a great resource.
And that was Dan Waters, actually, episode 122. And, you know, anything you can do to build your marketing team as a photographer, you have to go for it. Because you have to market yourself all the time, but it's hard to find the time. And so this is one of the perfect solutions to have other people marketing for you. And you can still run your business. Like, you don't, it's almost like it saves you time.
So, it's actually, yeah, it multiplies your efforts, and it definitely gets easier as you go. I mean, at first it will be maybe a little intimidating, but I think you'll find that the more you try, the more comfortable it becomes, and you get better at it, like anything, over time. So the key is just to get started, you know, and take small steps towards that goal.
Very true. Great point. So we just covered how we can get other businesses to market for us. Now let's talk about how we can have our actual clients marketing for us. How do we begin to do that?
I think the key is to identify your ideal client and try to get them to be excited about your work and actually be your sort of brand ambassador. Mm-hmm. So, one thing you could do is, if you have a particular client who's very happy with your work, you can approach them about, ways that they can refer, you know, clients to you and kind of, represent your work out in the world. So, one particular example we have on the site, relates to senior portrait photography. Mm-hmm. So there was a photographer who would sort of court the influencers in the class sort of do a photo shoot with them and have them be the brand ambassador, and the word of mouth spreading, you know, significantly helped him out. So you would typically offer some kind of incentive, ideally, you know, for the person. And it may be, take the example of the senior portrait. If you identify, maybe you give them a discount or a break on some of the related services like hair, makeup, in exchange for them, you know, sort of spreading the word for you.
Interesting. Okay. And do you see people offering prints as well, or like what kind of other?
That's another. Yeah, that would be another great way. So you could offer some additional prints or an extra sitting, or maybe a different, you know, an extra shot for someone's session if they're willing to kind of spread the word for you.
I'm going to go over the basic three steps that you just gave, just to make sure that we're all on the same page. So number one, identify your ideal client, which is huge, by the way. That is, I cannot stress how important that is. And then number two, recruit your ideal client to become your brand ambassador. And then number three, reward them with discounts or prints or some kind of incentive when they start referring other people to you.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary of the key elements there. Yeah.
And as far as identifying the ideal client, I want to go back to that really quick. For step number one, one of the mistakes I made when I first started my business was that I never set aside time to identify who were my ideal clients for my business. I took anyone and everyone, and I undercharged until I was burned out. And I see that happen time and time again with photographers who were just starting out and trying to go pro. And aside from commoditizing the market, it also makes your life miserable if you take anyone and everyone. And I understand that when you're first starting out, you may not be sure who you ideally want to work with. But say after 6 months or a year, really sit down and identify your ideal client. Try to nail down who you like working with and who likes working with you and who's willing to pay you what you're worth, for example. And once you begin to identify that type of person, take it a step further and analyze their lifestyle. So where they like to shop, where they like to eat, what their values are. All of these things help you speak their language and communicate. Like, even different people use different words, right? A 25-year-old bride-to-be versus a 55-year-old bride-to-be. Completely different language. So once you identify your ideal client, that will shape your entire business.
Absolutely. It's probably one of the most important things because it allows you to really focus your efforts on things that are, you know, sort of high value. So clients that represent the type of work you do.
And also, this just came to mind, clients that like your style, too. I think a lot of photographers struggle with getting, again, when I say a lot of photographers, I've made every single mistake in the book. So I will use myself as an example yet again. You know, I got caught up in trends, too. And it took me a while to realize I was just following trends as far as stylistic trends. So certain Lightroom presets that look a certain way, or another photographer's doing this and I want to use their style. And while it's good to have influences, it's also good to know what your personal style is. And then an important part of identifying your ideal client is identifying those people that really like your style. I mean, it all adds up to just, it makes your business a lot more fun to run at the end of the day.
Your personal style is sort of your signature. So right. you may over time get to a point where your photos are sort of associated with you or identifiable to you, and because of your unique, you know, take on things. So that's actually a great point.
And you know, I think it was Tim Wallace, a photographer who focuses on, I believe, the automotive industry. I got to hear him talk in person last year in Chicago, and he said that it was your style that really helps separate you from everybody else. There are a zillion photographers out there, but it's your style that helps you stand out, actually. It's one of the important key ways that it helps you rise above the other people in your local area. If people can look at your photo and go, oh, that's a Shamir Young. Shamir took that. I mean, right there, that is so powerful. And then you'll have clients coming to you, which, you know, doesn't that sound wonderful to the photographer who's just starting out, right? So that's definitely what we want. Is there anything that we haven't touched on? We're about to move to online marketing strategies. But before we get to that, is there anything that we haven't touched on for the offline in-person marketing?
I think we covered most of it. To kind of summarize it, the key is, you know, to foster those relationships in the offline world that are sort of complementary to what you do. And over time, you know, the momentum will grow.
Perfect. All right. So for the online marketing strategies, you know, I have to admit, this is one of the things that I could really give more time to with my own business. So could you tell us kind of what elements are crucial? Let's talk about the website, a photographer's website. What elements are crucial that you think every photographer should have on their photography website?
The key way to think about it is it's, in a lot of ways, it's your calling card. It's your business card. So you want it, to reflect sort of your personality and your style. You want it to be easy for people to, for example, find how to get in touch with you, to really understand what you do, you know, specifically, or what niche you're involved in. And you want it to look nice, so it's represent your brand the way you want to be represented.
Perfect. If you hear me typing, I'm over here taking notes, actually. And those are great points. I see a lot of, it's easy to get caught up in Facebook, your Facebook page. Now, don't get me wrong, Facebook is super important for any business. But what I'm beginning to see is photographers put more attention to their Facebook business page than to their website, which I believe is a mistake. First of all, because you don't own the real estate that you have on Facebook. It's kind of like you're renting, and they can shut you down anytime they want. But like you said, your website is your calling card. And so you mentioned, the first thing you mentioned was that it has to have personality. That's huge. Being able to reflect your authentic personality, that's another way that'll help you stand out, I believe. I think we're moving away from the websites that look kind of cold and corporate, you know? And especially with photographers, the ones who were really successful, you look at their websites and their personality shines through even in their about page. Like, just to touch on the about page, I was looking at a wedding photographer and she was giving fun facts about herself, like the kind of coffee she liked to drink and her dog and her relationship with her husband. And she just demonstrated that she was a real person and this was her personality and she understood love. And oh, by the way, this is why she'd be a great wedding photographer for you. And it draws you in because people do business with other people as opposed to cold businesses that don't have any personality. And that also takes us to style. That was the second thing that you mentioned as well. So your website should really reflect the style of photography that you do. Let's say an equine, a horse photographer, they will have a different looking website than my website, which focuses on business headshots, right? So it has to be the style also that your ideal client would identify with. And then you mentioned a really good one, Dave. It has to be easy for people to get in touch. I can't count how many websites I go to and I can't find a phone number or even an email address. And, you know, a lot of websites will have a contact page, which is fine, but I think that it's key that people have a way to get in touch with you right away. And I've heard photographers say, well, if I put my phone number on the website, I might get all these calls. Oh, how horrible.
It's amazing how that works, huh?
Right, exactly. Now I have to check my website and see if my phone number is up there, put myself on the spot. But yeah, you know, if a client is wanting to call you in that moment, then that's a very hot lead.
Absolutely. Yeah, it allows you to make actually that personal connection, you know, with someone. So you can, right from the start, begin to understand if they're your ideal client and what they're looking for.
Exactly. Yep. It all goes back to knowing who your ideal client is in the first place. So for those who are non-techie, and I'm making air quotes when I say that, non-techie, how do they make their website look good design-wise?
So probably the easiest way is there's hundreds of website themes, some free, some paid. That's probably where to start is to pick a good website theme. For a WordPress site, there's absolutely the WordPress theme that you choose. Pick one that appeals to you and sort of has the character, reflects your character. But there's hundreds of choices, but that's probably the easiest way to get something that's tried and true and get it up and running quickly. So,
for sure. I see a lot of photographers use WordPress. Another one is Zenfolio. So if you go to my portrait photography site, then it's actually built on Zenfolio. Now, it's interesting because I'm super comfortable in WordPress. So, I mean, my podcast website, that's built in WordPress. My Creative Hub website, that's built in WordPress. But as far as my photography specifically, it was easy for me to just use Zenfolio, which is a service for a website service specifically for photographers. And SmugMug is another one. And they do something similar to WordPress in that they provide you themes or templates or pre-built designs where you can choose one based on your personality and how close that theme or template comes to your personality, and then you can customize it from there. But it saves a ton of time.
Yeah, that's a great point. Using, you know, something that's sort of more turnkey, you know that it's going to be, you know, optimized for, you know, for your photography business. And what I mean by that is maybe, you know, it will support having a gallery. It will support, obviously, all the basics of getting contacts and various sales pages and so forth, and look good, which is key. So that's a great point.
Right. Yeah, because on Zenfolio, and I'm sure on SmugMug, you can have clients order prints right from your website, which is, you know, that's great. And it all just, it comes with it, so. So how do we begin the process? And this is a big one, I know. But how do we begin the process of getting leads via Google search?
Yes, this is probably one of the biggest maybe mysteries to a lot of people. But it can get very complex, but it, on some level, there's some very simple principles. So specifically what we're talking about is what's known as search engine optimization, which is what that kind of means is making your site visible and friendly to the search engine so that it's easy for people to find it. And probably the first key point to getting leads via Google search is make sure you're showing up in local search. So make sure your business is listed in the Google My Business local search and has the accurate, contact information. Because a lot of times people will be doing search that's, you know, related to a specific location. And if Google knows about you in that way, you can gain leads.
So how do we sign up for that?
So basically you go to google.com/business, and on that page there's a way to get started. So it's a fairly quick process to get it started and enter your information and sort of claim your business.
And I'm looking at it right now, and yeah, they make it looks like it's pretty cut and dry. Tell us which business is yours, verify that you're you. So I mean, overall this looks like it would take maybe like 20 minutes
sure
to fill out.
Yeah, and they actually, if you have a physical address, it's important to include that, because you know that helps them in the location, locating the business, so being able to show it in a search, you know, from a particular geographic area. And it's also important to make sure that address is consistent in the various places where you may list it. So any other types of business listings, make sure you're using the same, you know, correct address there.
So what about the photographers who have a home studio but don't want to list their home address? Can they just do like a geographic area?
Yeah, they have an option. I forget exactly what it's called, but it ties you to an area versus a specific address. I think it's an option that says you perform work at client sites and it's tied to a geographic area. So there is definitely an option for doing that.
Excellent. Well, that sounds like a 20-minute time commitment that that can make quite a difference as far as people finding you and coming to you. And then the other type of SEO, so search engine optimization, how important is it to have adequate keywords and descriptions for our actual websites? So like the back end of it or the separate pages.
Sure, that's important too. That process can take, you know, some time to build up in the rankings. But if you're using, let's say, a Zenfolio site or a WordPress theme, a lot of times they will take care of some of the basics in terms of the way the pages are constructed and laid out. So the first part of that is every website has what's called a site map. And that's something that's sort of behind the scenes, but it's a way for Google to understand the structure of your website. So by using one of these themes or WordPress sites, it makes sure that is set up correctly. And then naming, just making sure the information, for example, in titles of pages sort of reflects the content. So there's not as much of an emphasis these days on specific exact keyword matching. It's more, Google's got much more sophisticated in the past couple of years. So basically they can infer intent of a search and look for pages that match the intent versus the specific keywords. So it's not so important to target like exact keyword matches, but the content, you know, should be using language and description that sort of relates to the topic.
So the content of the page itself?
Right. Basically, you want to make sure that it's written sort of in a natural way, and it's using, you know, words that are related that would normally be found together, versus trying to optimize and just repeating the same keyword over and over and over, something like that.
So I shouldn't do any keyword stuffing or
That's not going to get you very far these days. That type of technique did actually work years ago, but like I said, the algorithms have gotten much more sophisticated, and they're approaching to a point where they're using computers to understand the meaning. So as long as you're conveying that to Google, that's kind of the key there, as opposed to being really focused on certain keywords specifically.
So for the listeners who may not know exactly what keyword stuffing is, it's when you use the same keyword over and over again, ad nauseum, kind of in an artificial way,
right?
For the description of your page, or even, and correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. since you know more about this than I do, David, mm-hmm. but having a page, like on my about page, if I said something like, my name is Shamir Young, and I'm a Port Huron photographer, and if you need a Port Huron photographer, then this Port Huron photographer, like obviously I'm trying to stuff in Port Huron photographer as much as I can.
Yeah, you don't want to be sort of repeating the exact search term that you're expecting people to be using to find you, because Google's sort of on to that trick, and they've gotten a lot more sophisticated.
Yeah, and I thought they would kind of penalize you too. I thought I heard that somewhere.
Yeah, that can be true if it's really blatant. They can actually, they perform computer sort of algorithmic analysis of the pages, and they can bump you down the rankings if they find that sort of content. And also in extreme cases, they have what's called a manual review, which is if the site kind of gets flagged by one of the algorithms for being over-optimized, they may actually have a real person look at it and kind of determine if it's trying to game the system. So.
Mm-hmm. And as you were talking, this brought up an interesting thought. So you were talking about having natural sounding descriptions and text on your pages. So I think it's easy as photographers to fall into the trap of just posting photos on your website. Obviously, that's what it's for. But I really want to mention how important it is to include text on each page of your website, or as much as you can, because that's what's going to give your website a lot of SEO, search engine optimization juice.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, so Google is really good at understanding and analyzing text, but analyzing images, that's a whole nother ballgame. So one of the recommendations we make quite often is it's really nice to have, let's say, a gallery of your work, but you don't necessarily want that to be your main homepage, because you want your main homepage to really, you know, have the text and the description of the content that you want to be found for. And it is okay to have, you know, some images on the page, and that actually increases sort of the user engagement. But that's a great point, that you have to resist the temptation of being sort of photo heavy on sort of your landing pages, let's say.
Right, because I've seen some beautiful sites, and I've, once again, guilty of this myself, where you go on the site and there's beautiful photos, but there's not a whole lot of words. I mean, you know, there's the About Me page, like, hey, this is what I do, you know, super short paragraph. And it's very text sparse. But having text on the pages, it helps Google find you, but it can also educate the person who's looking at your website as well. I mean, for example, writing case studies of how you've worked with past clients, that gives you an opportunity to show off your photos, but also you can write in the working relationship that you had with them, how you helped them solve a problem, how you made a bride's wedding the most wonderful experience ever, and you documented every step of it, and actually typing that out, you know, using actual words. And that's all SEO juice. I mean, a lot of photographers, they'll have case studies, but also a blog too. So, I mean, some will work case studies into their blog itself, and the others will also include educational information. So think about what you want your client to know about your photography business. Or think about the most common questions that potential clients will ask you. And then type up, you know, a couple blog posts about that. And this will all help people find your site online in the long run. And it's a great natural way to kind of give your website, you know, an SEO boost as well.
Yeah, so to that point, one kind of way to get started for people who maybe are not sure what the best way to go about it is if you do have a blog on your site, simply do a write-up of the photo shoots you do and describe the details about it and you can include some photos, you know, assuming you have the permission. And it's a natural way to build content on your site, and it will sort of naturally increase the, you know, the keywords that Google will see, because you'll be referring to all types of photography related terms and geographical sort of keywords, locations and types of photography. So it's an easy way if you don't know where to get started. That's a good suggestion for starting off building out the content.
For sure. And then when you're putting out a blog, you can post that on your Facebook page. People eat that stuff up on social media, like behind the scenes during a photo shoot type of thing. That goes a long way.
Right. And it's a great way to actually get exposure, you know, through Facebook to people coming to your website and checking out your services, because it will naturally get kind of shared and promoted among your Facebook friends and followers. So,
absolutely. Especially if you tag the person that's in the blog post or in the photos, and then they, you know, that shows up on their page or their profile, and then other friends start commenting. And by the way, I build the permission piece of that, making sure that I have permission to write blog posts about them. I build that into the contract that they sign with me. And then I also verbally mention and kind of have a short discussion with them about it too. So that, because you can have stuff in your contract, but not all clients are going to read every word of it. So I make sure they understand that I have the intent of making a blog post about them at some point in time. And if they're not comfortable with it, which is very rare, by the way, but if they're not comfortable with it, then I don't include it on my blog post. You know, simple as that. So,
right. That's an excellent suggestion. And like you said, you don't need to post each and every shoot. You'd probably, you know, spend an inordinate amount of time writing the post, but you want to pick the kind of the highlights. But yeah, it's great to get that discussed up front.
So I'm going to summarize what we talked about here as far as the online marketing strategies. And let me know if I left anything out, David. So we have your website, first of all. Number one, having a strong, effective website that showcases your personality, your style. It's easy for people to get in touch with you. They can tell right away what niche you're in. Niche, however you want to say that word.
Tomato, tomato.
Exactly. As soon as they get to your website, they should tell what you do, basically. You should have a great design. As far as designing a website, you know, don't feel like you have to build it yourself. And don't use up all that time trying to do that. There are easier ways to do that. There's WordPress, a bunch of themes out there that you can use, probably thousands of themes. There are other photographer-specific website solutions like Zenfolio or SmugMug. So having an effective website is key. And then as far as SEO, so search engine optimization, we talked about getting on the local search for Google. And again, we're going to have that link in the show notes for that. But making sure that people can find you when they're looking for a photographer in your specific city, you want your name to come up. And that's a definite source of potential leads for you. Also, we talked about just the words, having words on your website that naturally describe what you do. You can do that in a blog, you can do it in case studies, and then once you have that content up there, then you can post that on Facebook as well. And so that kind of works both ways too. And so you can begin getting attention on Facebook, and that can direct people to your website. How did I do, David?
I think you hit all the key points. As far as the, you know, the writing, the key there is like we said, just kind of make it natural and don't really overthink it and try to optimize it for what you think people are going to search for. You just want to write in a natural way that, you know, sort of reflects the type of work you're doing, and Google will take it from there.
And it doesn't have to be a 5,000 word post, by the way. You know, it can be like 500 words or whatever you're able to pump out at the moment.
Right. So one other small factor is, as far as SEO for your site, is that, you know, the more frequent it's updated, is a good signal as well. So if it's a site that hasn't been updated for a long time, you know, that can can affect it. But the more active it is and the more engaging it is, also helps your cause with regard to the search engines.
So if you haven't updated your website in like a year, you're actually kind of penalized for that?
Not necessarily penalized, but Google will revisit more often sites that are updated more often. So you have a chance to sort of be re-indexed the more often you're updating it.
Wow. Good. Okay. I have some work to do on my own website, apparently. And you know, my next question for you, I actually, not to put you on the spot, but off the top of your head, no pressure, is there a particular photography resource that you'd like to recommend that would kind of help our listeners improve their photography business?
Well, so we have a lot of great information on Photography Spark. In particular, there's some of our more, you know, sort of popular posts. There's some information about getting started in your photography business. And there's a bunch of information about search engine optimization. And we also offer the search engine optimization cookbook, which sort of gives you an overview of some of the stuff we've talked about today and walks you through step by step some of the things that you can do to help improve your SEO.
Perfect. I was trying to nudge you to mention Photography Spark again. All right, so we can find you then at photographyspark.com.
That's right.
Perfect. And are there any other places online you want to mention where we can find you?
Yeah, and so you can also find us on Facebook at The Photo Spark, or search for Photography Spark on Facebook.
Very cool. Well, hey, thank you, David, for just being on the show and sharing your expertise with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks very much. I really enjoyed it.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I ask that you please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews we get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. We want to reach as many people as possible and help improve our photo industry. I appreciate you all. Thanks for listening.